all these
on the Malloy program, obviously. Thank you very much for tuning in. Let me get things settled here. I'm sorry, I was just out and back horseback riding. No, not really. I don't have one of those. Wish I did. How was your day today? Did you have a good day? Huh? It's to the point now where the nightly news leads with the Michael Jackson story. Oh. And the Catholic Church is having another one of its periodic meltdowns. Now it's attacking nuns because they're not being nunnish enough, I guess. We have a couple of emails I want to share with you a little bit later about what we were talking about last night. The meltdown in California, the absolute unzipping and coming apart. All the seams are bursting in California, and it's just going to flop onto the beach, I guess, and just lay there until seagulls come and pick its eyes out. I don't know. It's horrible. The Taliban has seized a U.S. soldier in Afghanistan. Horrifying when you think about that. The Barack Obama administration is turning into Bush Light. And it's really scary. I don't know, man. I think I've just about had enough now. Also, the Senate is checking into the Blackwater crime family. What else? They're being accused of murder, kidnapping, all sorts of stuff. Oh, yeah. And if we get to it tonight, I got to tell you about Kerry Cash. He's a relative of the now dead country singer Johnny Cash. He's a Navy chaplain, and he is also the he's the preacher, whatever. He's the head of the chapel at Camp David, where presidents go to do whatever they do. So we've got several things on the agenda tonight that I'd like to get to. Also, we have some audio directly from Cynthia McKinney that was played on WBAIX on the West Coast. I guess, is that, where is that? I think it's on the West Coast, I think. Or is that on the East Coast? I don't know. It's one of the Pacifica stations. It's WBAI, and they add the X because they're in exile. I'm not sure what the internal struggle is at BAI. I know Pacifica is just seriously trying to kill itself and will probably succeed. But anyway, we're going to play that for you. But we're going to start tonight with something that Bob sent me earlier today. And it just starts out, everything I know, everything I've learned, everything I've ever read can be summed up in 3 minutes by George Carlin.
There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The big, the wealthy, the real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the they spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table to figure out how badly they're getting f***ed by a system that threw them overboard 30 years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your retirement money. They want it back. So they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. And by the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged, and nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hard-working people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hard-working people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich suckers who don't give a f*** about them. They don't give a f*** about you. They don't give a f*** about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, I know. I know, George. Sorry for the beeps. We live in a country where it's okay to go bomb thousands and thousands of people under red mist, but we can't say the F word on the air. Somebody will get their bloomers in a wad, and the little Malloy Broadcasting will cease to exist because of the fine that'll be lumped on us. And just when you thought that maybe Barack Obama was leading us out of the wilderness, at least I thought that. I know a lot of you are way ahead of me on this, but... The White House move on indefinite detention is only the latest step in lawless direction. This is what it says. This is from the Examiner, San Francisco, I guess. President Barack Obama is actively considering issuing an executive order authorizing the continued indefinite detention of terrorism suspects without trial, according to the Washington Post and ProPublica. The news is widely being treated as a shocking about-face for a president who has criticized his predecessor's harsh tactics in dealing with alleged terrorists. But for anybody paying attention, this is just one more step along a path the president has already traveled, with indefinite detention hinted at in a May speech and even championed by the Obama administration in legal papers filed in March. And Bob says what we have here is a charming, erudite man who is slightly more benign than his predecessor. Unless, of course, you live in Iraq, Afghanistan, or Pakistan, then he's not more benign at all. Barack Obama is doing evil things. Is he doing these things because there's a gun to his head? Is he being forced to do these things? Does it make any difference? Does it make any difference to the prisoners held at Guantanamo since 2002? Bush may have locked them up, but Obama has the key now. For 12 years, he served as a professor of constitutional law. If Obama's a man of character, aren't his insides twisted into knots by now? He's either an evil man or a good man forced to do evil things. What's the difference? Favorite quote of the week from Steve Weinberg, Nobel laureate in physics. Quote, with or without religion, you would have good people doing good things and evil people doing evil things. But for good people to do evil things, that takes religion. Oh, amen. 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 Yeah, it's going to be one of these nights, so you might want to buckle up. There's a little bit more here from Bob's missive, which we will get to after the break. But, I'm pretty much running out of hope for the Obama. Not hope in general. You know, I'm eating up with hope. If I didn't have hope, I would have killed myself, 25 years ago? No, I have lots of hope. lots of hope. Just, I am losing any hope for the administration of President Barack Obama. Sorry, it's just happening, isn't it? It really is happening. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Now one man's fault is another man's fair. One man's tooth is another man's hair. One man's hand is another man's stub. One man's feast is another man's grub. One man's dread is another man's dream. One man's sigh is another man's scream. One man's water is another man's wine. One man's daughter is another man crying. For every father's daughter, for every mother's son,
introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA-estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 miles on a tank of gas. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. Past the hour. Now, that little bit I just shared with you from the Washington Post, President Barack Obama is actively considering issuing an executive order authorizing the continued indefinite detention of terrorism suspects without trial. 6 days ago, the Obama White House denied that. The White House dismissed reports that it has drafted an executive order. You notice the difference in language here. And once that report was dismissed by the White House, the Washington Post said the Obama administration, it changed it from has drafted an executive order that would reassert presidential authority to incarcerate terrorism suspects indefinitely. They changed it to is drafting rather than has drafted. It's changed to is drafting. Like, I give a damn. There should not be any of that information, or not information, any of that going on inside the Obama, any White House, but certainly not the Obama White House. Should there? Back to Steven Weinberg, Nobel laureate in physics. I love this quote. I'm going to do it again. With or without religion, you would have good people doing good things and evil people doing evil things. But for good people to do evil things, that takes religion. And here's Bob's last observation of the day. As a result of the PCORA Commission's findings, that was way back in 1930-something, as a result of the PCORA Commission's findings, the United States Congress passed the Glass-Steagall Banking Act of 1933 to separate commercial and investment banking. They also passed the Securities Act of 1933 to set penalties for filing false information about stock offerings. And they also passed the Securities Exchange Act of 1934, which formed the SEC to regulate stock exchanges. For 66 years, the ravenous dogs were chained and kept from ripping our throats out. The money-mad pirates who gutted the country, causing the Great Depression, waited and waited until they could buy enough Republicans and Democrats alike to loosen the chains so they could do it all over again. And they did. The Savings and Loan Warm-Up Act finished back in the 80s, finished like this. Interest on the SNL bailout bonds costs us $13 billion a year forever. And this time, we've been ripped off for trillions. Long story short, where is there a Democrat pushing for the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Banking Act of 1933? Which brings us back to what George Carlin was saying at the beginning of tonight's program. Oh my, oh my, oh my. You know, there really is no place left to hide right now. There's no place for the money freaks in this country, the corporatists in this country, the predatory capitalists. There's no place for them to hide. It's all out in the open if anybody wants to take a look. And there's no place for you and me to hide. No place. I mean, we can't keep doing this. They can't keep doing it. We can't keep covering up our eyes and putting our hands over our ears and going, la, 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 la. We can't do it anymore. You can't believe anymore that unless you're insane. Now, if you are clinically, measurably insane, then yes, you can continue to pretend. In other words, I'm describing Republicans here, working class Republicans who would rather cut their own throats than try to bring all this madness to an end. But they... corporate America, the money managers, the thieves, the liars, the cheats who continue to just take everything they can get from us. Everything. Look at California. Look what Enron did. Look at Wall Street. Look, I mean, just on and on. And Bernie Madoff, 150 years in prison. Bernie Madoff was chump change. I know a lot of people got hurt, but he was chump change. He doesn't even show up on the radar. In the big picture, the trillions. You know what $60 billion is up against $1 trillion? Nothing. Nothing. But anyway, so we can no longer claim that we're blind. We can no longer claim that we're ignorant. We can no longer claim that we can't see. There's no place left to hide. Not for them, and certainly not for us. Can't be done. So the only thing left for people who do not want to change this system permanently is to willfully go along with the madness. Willfully. That's it, Truth Seeker. Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon on the highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM Compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. It's about 25 before the hour. Time for a report from Prairie 2, who I thought maybe had somebody had snatched him and turned him into canned food, but... he writes tonight, Mike, the June unemployment numbers came out today early so that everybody can take an extra day off for the holiday. But the numbers show a record number of Americans will be taking an extended holiday with no prospect of employment. This is the first time since the Great Depression that the number of existing jobs has dropped below the number created during the previous business cycle. There are now fewer jobs than there were in May of 2000. Even though the population has increased to produce 12.5 million more people who need jobs. The real unemployment rate is in the range of 17.5% if you counted jobs the way they did 40 years ago. And with 467,000 fewer jobs in June alone, any reversal of this trend has been pushed back into 2010 by even the most Pollyanna of forecasts. The elephant in the room that everyone is ignoring is that the jobs being lost are the real economy drivers. This fact has been concealed by massive imports from China, paid for by printing money. Republicans continue to chant global economy, but they have no answer for where the global money will come from to pay the trillions and trillions in debt obligations the Republicans have created, let alone pay for future imports. The Republicans used to point to the empty store shelves in the Soviet Union in contrast to the plenty manufactured here to demonstrate the superiority of capitalism. Once the communist Chinese cut up our credit card, the empty store shelves will be here. The plenty here was in spite of capitalism, not because of it. Capitalism brought us the last Great Depression, and thanks to Republicans and some Democrats like Clinton, we're on the verge of a depression that has not been seen anywhere, ever. FDR was urged repeatedly to declare martial law in the 30s to bring the corporate robber barons under control. And once war broke out, that is basically what he did. Is Obama planning to use the martial law apparatus created by the Bush crime family? Will he have any choice? Is he really on our side? Prairie 2. Go to his website, prairienumber2.com, prairienumeral2.com. Check it out. Well, between Bob and Prairie 2, I'm about ready to stick my head in a bucket of water and breathe deeply. Jesus, God. Oh, there's so much more. I read this thing in the Times this morning about the Vatican has appointed a hit woman to start checking up on nuns in various, they don't call nunneries anymore, but in communities of nuns around the United States to see if they are living up to the law as laid out by the church in the 14th century. And there is a great suspicion that they are not. Now, there is a movement in this country. The woman's name, the nun's name escapes me, the sister's name, whatever term you would like. It's in this morning's Times. You can find it online. Go to nytimes.com, yada, yada, yada. But she is saying, no, she's not going to submit to these kinds of interviews because, in the first place, she doesn't say this, but she recognizes this is just one more example of the fascism that is the Catholic Church. There truly is no more fascist of a religious organization than the Catholic Church. Whether you agree or disagree with that is immaterial to me. I really don't give a damn. That is an absolute fact. Disagree with me about gravity. Try that. But anyway, the same office that produced the current German Hitler Youth Pope, that office, he used to run that office, and again, I don't have it in front of me, so I can't say the name of that office, but it's the same office that 700 years ago tortured people, murdered Jews, murdered Muslims, murdered anybody they could get their hands on if they wouldn't immediately confess and swear fealty to the church, and secondarily, to Jesus Christ, you see. So that same office now that produced the Inquisition's most hideous moments and the current Pope has now produced a Mother Superior who, according to the New York Times, smiles a lot and is very chirpy, but she has the power of 800, 900, 1,000, 1,500 years of death, destruction, murder, and condemnation of people's immortal souls, according to the church, at her disposal. Nice, huh? Yeah? Nice. I wonder if O'Reilly will suggest what would happen if this woman has a hot flash. I mean, he said that about Sotomayor, didn't he? I wonder if any of these Catholics that infest right-wing talk radio will have anything to say about the good Mother Superior who is now going to make Carrie Nation look like a drunk. You do get that reference, don't you? I hope. So, the story scared the hell out of me because I remember Catholic nuns from 50 years ago. I had a lot of kids, a lot of friends who were Catholic kids. And, you know, I've said this before. I had a lot of Catholic friends, a lot of Jewish friends growing up. Didn't have any Muslim friends. I didn't know what a Muslim was. But I had a lot of Catholic and Jewish friends and a lot of Protestants too. But the Catholic kids were the ones that were most intriguing to me because they could just be absolute little hellions, just violent little bastards until every Wednesday night when they go to confession. and they come out of confession. Everything, slate was written clean. They had to go do their Hail Marys and their Our Fathers and their acts of contrition and so on and so forth. But the slate was wiped clean, and they could start the process all over again. You know, great. Yeah, you know, I used to think, Jesus, why? I'm Irish and Italian. Why am I not Catholic? That's a long story. Never mind. But I knew this about Catholic nuns. They were frightening. You never saw them in street dress. I'm talking prior to Vatican II now. I'm going back a long time here. But the Catholic nuns, you knew it was a nun as soon as you saw the fluttering of this black, vampiric outfit she had on, like, foom, 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 foom. Here she comes. And there's always two or three of them together, right? Foom, 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 coming down the street. And it was frightening. Forget all the white around their face. It was the black that got me. Foom, foom, foom. And my Catholic chums used to tell me, you know, you go to a public school. You don't know what it's like going to a Catholic school. You have no idea. Do you know what these nuns do? No, what do they do? Unspeakable acts! And I can't tell you, because that would be a menial sin. And if the nun finds out about it, the unspeakable acts will become even more unspeakable. I thought it was all nonsense and bird squat, you know. Can't be that bad. Foom, foom, foom. Here they come with that black foom, foom. Scary stuff, man. Scary stuff. Really scary stuff. And when I used to venture inside a Catholic church with some of my friends, which was scary enough. I mean, a Catholic church, oh, my God. They weren't churches. They were cathedrals. Huge cathedral. You know, and I think they were built that way to make any human being that walked in there feel utterly intimidated, you know. This is God's house. And you'd walk in, and my Catholic friends would dip their hand into the holy water or whatever it was and do the cross and, you know, throw a nickel into the poor box or whatever, a penny. I don't know. It was a long time ago. But the Catholic nuns, the women, foom, foom, foom. Every time they walked, you know, the black skirts and the cape and everything would billow out. And it was just scary. I don't know. It just scared the living hell out of me, so to speak. Well, Darren in North Carolina writes, Mike, I can't say I'm totally surprised by this nun crackdown. A couple of years ago, a non-Catholic attending a Catholic university, I took a theology course taught by a nun. I just knew that I would be called to task for my atheist views. To my surprise, this nun was very reasonable. She had no problem with my views. Her issues were the hardcore Catholics, teenagers in many cases, in full revolt, but all but demanding to the professor, a nun, that she didn't know the Bible and should stop teaching the reality of evolution and say openly that all non-Christians are damned. She stood her ground, and I can only hope this crackdown doesn't affect this great teacher who taught love, acceptance, and science rather than hate, intolerance, and ignorance. Darren in North Carolina. Well, that's the thing. Thanks, Darren. That's the thing that bothers me, because even though when I was a kid, you know, the black dress and the cape and the shoes and they never had any hands. I never saw hands. They were just like, foom, foom, foom. This great dark cape thing and a face and the face. I mean, seriously, if you saw one of the sisters in a dark church with all that black drape on her and then the white thing around her face, my God, it looked like a floating face. That's scary when you're, you know, 11, 12. And then they broke free. You see, the Catholic nuns broke free after Vatican II, and they were able to dress in non-habit-forming dress. No pun intended there. Non-habit-forming. And they could live off campus. What do you call the nunnery? I don't know. They could live off church property. They could get an apartment. They could work with the poor. They could get involved in liberation theology. But all of a sudden, it appears that the German Pope has had enough of that nonsense.
Thank you.
Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles.
Drop of a hat. Jesus, really got it.
10 before the hour. Okay, we're just getting update after update. This is just a couple of hours ago, as a matter of fact, from ProPublica, the journalism in the public interest. It's a great website. In an interview with the Associated Press today, Obama said that if he does go ahead with indefinite detention for terrorism suspects, that he would ask Congress to approve it by law. That may be even scarier, because the part that's left out there then would be, or left out of that statement, is for the Supreme Court to rule on the constitutionality. Just because Congress approves something by law doesn't mean squat, does it? Who knows? He said, according to the AP, quote, "It is very important that the American people and Congress, in conjunction with my administration, come up with a structure that is not only legitimate in the eyes of our constitutional traditions, but also in the eyes of the international community," end quote. Those are weasel words. What happened, of course, and because you just heard me quote it, last Friday, ProPublica and the Washington Post wrote that the White House, facing difficulties in Congress over the closure of the prison facility at Guantanamo, were considering an executive order to hold suspects that may be too dangerous to release and too difficult to charge. Let me say that again. An executive order to hold suspects who may be too dangerous to release and too difficult to charge? Well, what the hell does that mean? That was according to three government officials who talked with both the Post and ProPublica. The New York Times also reported that an executive order was under consideration. Administration officials told the New York Times that working with Congress did not necessarily mean passing legislation. Mr. Obama, they said, would consult with lawmakers, even if he eventually decided to enact his system through executive order. See, once you open that door, right? Who opened that door? Was it Clinton or was it Cheney? But the door is wide open. The fact that issuing executive orders bypassing both the Congress and the Supreme Court. Now, Obama says here, well, you know, I would get a law from Congress. So what? You get a law from Congress. This Congress has about as much credibility as a trainload of drunks coming back from a convention of gun owners. I mean, you know what? You get a law passed by Congress that says, okay, go ahead, Mr. President, you can preventively detain indefinitely anybody that somebody deems too difficult to charge and too risky to let go. Okay, so the Obama administration, the Justice Department, detains them. And then what? Do they have the right to challenge that detention? Do they have a right under habeas corpus to go to a court somewhere, an appeals court, and say, wait, this is in violation of the Constitution? Does the appeals court have a right then to say, yes, it is, release them? Or would the appeals court say, no, it isn't, stay where you are, in which case the detainee could then go to the Supreme Court to see how many, not if, but how many aspects of the U.S. Constitution were being burned? Doesn't say that, does it? Well, as Bob pointed out at the top of the show, is a very erudite man who is doing some very weird stuff. ProPublica adds, in response to our previous story, Ben LaBolt, a White House spokesman, acknowledged that an executive order was an option, but said no decision had been made and the president was waiting to see recommendations from a Justice Department task force studying detention policy. The task force has until July 22nd to offer proposals. One administration official suggested last week that the White House, that would be Barack Obama and the Justice Department, were already trying to build support for an executive order. But Obama told the AP today that indefinitely imprisoning terror suspects is, quote, one of the biggest challenges of my administration, end quote. Obama said, quote, it gives me huge pause. And that's why we're going to proceed very carefully on this front. And it may turn out that after looking at all the dimensions of this, that I don't feel comfortable with the proposals that surface on how to deal with this issue, end quote. It may turn out. It gives me huge pause. Maybe I won't feel comfortable. May I have the absolute temerity to suggest that the president's comfort level is immaterial, pointless, has nothing to do with this discussion, unless we have decided that we are no longer going to follow the directives set forth in the U.S. Constitution, period. Close paragraph. That's all there is to say about this. Unless I'm missing something. Oh, my. Well, who knows? John is calling from Brookings, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. Hey, hey, John.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Hey, I really appreciated the George Carlin piece.
I love him. I love him, too.
He is one of my favorites. He just speaks the truth. He really does.
Absolutely.
Or did.
Yeah, did.
He will. Anyway, there's a book that you could have written, I think. If you haven't read it, you'll love it. It's called Idiot America.
I haven't read it.
How Stupidity Became a Virtue in the Land of the Free by Charles Peirce. It's priceless.
Oh, Charles Peirce. Yeah, I know who that is. I love the title. Oh, God, now I'm going to have to get another book. Hey, hold on, will you, John?
Well, okay, I've got another thing I wanted to...
All right, well, let me put you on hold,
okay. And
we'll come right back after the break. Stay with us, truth seekers. We have miles to go before we sleep. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Did I put someone on hold? Yes, I did. Let's go back to John in Brookings, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. Hey, John.
Okay. This is a health funding idea, and it may be naive. And let me just lay the groundwork. We pay twice as much as the rest of the world and still have about 50 million people that don't have health coverage. I view a fee as a tax, like a fee for parking my car at a state park, or a fee to go over a bridge as a tax. Now, I'm viewing my health insurance premium that is about $12,000 a year, and I'm on Medicare. My wife isn't. So, anyway, I view that as a fee or a tax. Now, if I'm paying twice as much now, I would be happy to pay $6,000 a year for full coverage and have the whole country covered. Why can't we talk about what we do pay as a tax that's not called a tax?
Mm-hmm.
Too simple.
I think the reason it's not called a tax is something, isn't it, that everyone is subject to?
Well, everybody needs health care, and if you don't have the money, I mean, you pay the fee. I mean, I view it as an involuntary. I mean, I need health coverage.
Right.
My wife.
Right.
So
well,
I think I'm being taxed by a fee, but anyway. So the money's there. There's plenty of money to have single payer universal coverage, I think.
Right. Well,
I
think so too.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, John. I appreciate you checking in. Do any of you remember what was the monk's name? The monk back in, what was it, 63 in Saigon, who after his comrades doused him in gasoline, he sat there for a few seconds and then struck a match and burned himself to death. Do you remember that? Thich Quang Duc? I don't know. Don't email me. I'll do a Wikipedia during the next break. But the reason I bring that up is because my very best friend in the entire world gave me a book of AP photographs yesterday for my birthday. He stopped over to the house and he said, here, I want you to have this. And it's a book that came out probably 25 years ago, and it was the best AP photographs of a half century. Some of them Pulitzer Prize winners and so on and so forth. A great big old book. Looks like one of those coffee table books from Life magazine. You know what I'm talking about. Or A Day in the Life of the Soviet Union. You know what I'm talking about. And there were some horrific photographs inside. I don't know why he gave this to me as a birthday gift, but one of them was a series of photos. There were about five photos of the monk who set himself on fire in protest in Saigon in 63 or 64. And the only reason I bring it up now is, A, because Jack gave that to me yesterday, and I saw the photo again after having not seen it for probably a quarter of a century. But it reminded me why the monk had immolated himself. What the suicide was about, it had nothing to do with communism or capitalism or U.S. forces getting ready to invade or military advisors. This, of course, was before the big buildup in Vietnam. Diem, Ngo Dinh Diem was still the president. He had not been assassinated yet. John F. Kennedy was still the president here. He had not been assassinated yet. You know, both those presidents were assassinated within, what, 6 months of each other. The issue that caused the monk to set himself on fire and commit suicide by self-immolation was Diem, the leader of the country, was a Catholic. He was not a Buddhist. He was a Catholic. And there was an effort to begin restricting the rights of Buddhists. And what that burning was, do you remember? You have to be above a certain age, I guess, to remember it clearly. Sort of like the execution by the police chief of Saigon of a Viet Cong suspect. Remember that photograph? Hmm? Where the photograph that the world saw was the moment of impact, although you don't see the bullet, but the police chief in Saigon puts a bullet into the side of the head of a suspect. I don't know why this is coming up. I guess because of the, once again, evidence to me, if any were needed, about the persecution committed by the Catholic Church for two millennia against anybody who gets in their way. So the monk, that picture of the monk, and I guess what triggered my wanting to talk about this for a moment was what I read in the New York Times this morning about how they're starting to come down. The church now is going to bring the hammer down on Catholic nuns who have strayed too far outside the corral into which the church, the male-dominated, freaky Catholic Church, has insisted women stay forever. In that regard, it's not too much different from the Taliban. from fundamentalist Muslims. I mean, what's the difference really between a burqa and the outfits one worn by the nuns before Vatican II? Remember, you know, come on, get real. The only difference is the burqa covered the face. The habit that the nun wore did not, but it covered everything else, right? Because women are, well, you know, they're evil, smelly, nasty creatures, and brought death and destruction into the human experience. So they must be dressed up in black or dressed up in total color. Crazy stuff. So it's just that. That's all. Just random thoughts. You know, synapses in my brain misfire an awful lot from too many years of too many hard drugs. And of the psychoactive type. I don't mean coke and that nasty stuff or heroin, anything like that. I'm talking about the ones that just make you think too much. And so all the synapses were burned out. Too many mushroom trips. Too much peyote. Too much this. Too much that. Yada yada yada. Christ, half this audience probably has the same problem. But so all these misfiring synapses, and I get the picture of this burning monk last night. I'm looking at these photos after the show, and I'm going, God, yeah, I remember. Oh, no, look at this. And I'm reading the caption. Oh, that's right. It was because Ngo Dinh Diem was cracking down on the Buddhists because Diem was a Catholic. And, you know, we'll have none of that nonsense. This is French Vietnam, and the French are Catholic or something. I don't know. Whatever. And then this story this morning about the nuns. Good God, it's really getting bad, isn't it? I mean, when your talk show host just ricochets around inside his head like a crazy man. Do we have time to do the Cynthia thing? No, I don't think so. We'll do it when we come back. It's 2 minutes and 46 seconds. All right. When we do come back, we're going to play this for you. Cynthia McKinney called WBAIX, the Pacifica station in San Francisco, I believe, from the Israeli detention center where they hold, I don't know, among other people, illegal immigrants. Is that what? And apparently they're demanding that the 21 people or the 22 people who were snatched from the high seas sign an agreement agreeing to their immediate deportation from Israel. And McKinney and several other people are saying, we're not in Israel. Well, we weren't until you brought us here. We're not going to sign. So, you know, this could develop into nastiness. Now, the Washington Post today on one of their blog sites mentioned this story, and they mentioned it with a real nasty, smarmy, condescending kind of tone to the writer's point of view. A woman who works has a blog there. I forget her name. And that was bad enough. But the comments posted on the Washington Post website, this blog site, about, you know, keep Cynthia McKinney. It was just unbelievable. This is an American citizen. What if she were being held by the North Koreans? What if she were being held by Al Qaeda? Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon on the highway and up to 600 highway miles on a tank. It is the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. It's 22 past the hour. All right, Cynthia McKinney called radio station WBAIX in San Francisco from an Israeli prison. Tape's a little bit mushy, but I want you to listen to it. She explains her capture and imprisonment while she was trying to deliver humanitarian supplies to Gaza, including, apparently, a lot of crayons for kids.
This is Cynthia McKinney, and I'm calling from an Israeli prison cell block. The Free Gaza 21, who are human rights activists trying to take medical supplies, building supplies, and mostly crayons for children. I had a suitcase full of crayons for children to Gaza. And while we were on our way to Gaza, the Israelis threatened to fire on our boat. We did not turn around. Because we didn't turn around, the Israelis hijacked us because we wanted to give crayons to the children of Gaza. While we've been here, we have heard stories. We're in the women's section, and I have met women from Eritrea, Ethiopia, Sudan, Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast, Niger, and all of these women say the same thing, that they arrived here in a very difficult way. They came here through the United Nations. They have paperwork from the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, but when they arrived in Israel, they were taken by the police because Israel says to them, there is no UN in Israel. And what they all say is that we as foreigners have no rights. It's clear that the children of Palestine also don't have any rights. Something as simple as crayons for children. We have not committed any crime. We have been detained. And we want the people, really, of the world to see how we have been treated just because we wanted to deliver humanitarian assistance to the people of Gaza. It is incumbent upon President Obama to stand by his reported policy of easing the Gazan blockade and of allowing building supplies, medical supplies, and school supplies to go through. We call upon President Obama to use the highest levels of his authority to transmit this message to the Israelis. Let the Free Gaza 21 go, but also help the Palestinian people and the children of Gaza to assert and enjoy their natural human rights.
Cynthia McKinney from a detention center in southern Israel. The issue here, of course, is not, and I think I think McKinney or Myreed McGuire, the Nobel Prize winner from Ireland, Peace Prize winner, would say the same thing. The issue is not these 21 detainees. The issue is the plight, the situation of the Palestinian people. That's what this is about. I don't understand anything about the Middle East, frankly. But I truly do not understand why the Israelis refuse to allow humanitarian aid to get to, not just in this instance, but in any instance, to the people of Gaza specifically, but even further into other parts of the occupied territories to the Palestinian people. The only thing I can come up with is it is payback, and I realize that's a cheap shot on my part, but what am I left with? It's payback. Only it was not Palestinians who suppressed, murdered, tried to exterminate the Jewish people. It was Europeans who did that, and that attempt to completely exterminate the Jews was ignored by other Europeans and Americans. And it was horrific. Again, I only speak from what I have read. I did not experience the Holocaust, nor did any member of my family. But what I've been able to gather from reading, it was the most horrific experience that a group or a culture or a segment of the population of the earth could possibly go through. But is there the possibility that the Israelis have become the oppressor that oppressed them? Is that possible? Well, I know, there's no death camps. Yet. Okay, I've gotten 6 emails telling me that there are death camps already in Palestine, in the occupied territories. This is from, I don't know who it's from. There are death camps here. Remember the pictures of the dead Palestinian children you dared us to look at from the link on your website. Here's another one. No death camps yet? Gaza and the whole of the occupied territories is one large death camp. No commerce, no real way in or out, no supplies. The Israelis are choking the life out of the land and its people. They are the oppressors. That gives you a sense of what these emails are saying. I get it. I mean, I really do. You know what I'm talking about, the systematic, numerical, record-kept method of executing people in large rooms and then burning their corpses. But I get what you all are saying. The shocking thing to me, and it will remain a shocking thing until I die, because there is no solution to the situation in Israel, Palestine. As long as Israel insists on being a Jewish state, there is no solution. Any more than there would be a solution for the full participation of Christians and Jews in a country that called itself the Islamic Republic of whatever. And the whole purpose of Israel is a Jewish identity, a Jewish homeland. Palestinian Arabs are not Jewish. Yada, 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 yada. There is no solution. The only solution, with quotes around the word solution, is what we mentioned the other night, what I've talked about many, 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 many times. I used to believe in a two-state solution. That's nonsense. That's what so many people around the globe have been talking about. But it's not going to happen. It can't happen. When you think about it, it's an impossibility. And once again, why is he talking about this tonight? Because that is a flashpoint. It's a major flashpoint on this planet. And if we do click into a nuclear war, it's going to be somewhere in that area that stretches from the Eastern Mediterranean to Kashmir. That's where the flashpoint is going to be. You know, of course it is. Come on. Where else could it be? Oh, North Korea. Oh, yeah. Okay. But the absolute refusal of people to understand and to speak out about when I was younger, they used to call it the plight of the Palestinian people. That was the phrase, the plight of the Palestinian people, by the unlucky circumstance of living in a land that an ancient people decided was theirs. And after being almost removed from the face of the earth, the ancient people decided to go back to what they considered to be home. And the plight of the Palestinians was to be there. But if Israel ever becomes a secular state open to not just Semitic people, which would be Arab and Jew, but also non-Semitic people, just a country like, what, Lebanon? Then, you know, there might be a chance for survival of all the people who have an interest in being there. And even that probably wouldn't, it may work, but once the demographics of that little slice of land dictates that the majority of the people in Israel, and this is where it would lose its name, once the majority of the people in Israel were Arab, then the whole issue comes up again, right? The issue of exterminating the Jews. And the Jews have had, frankly, from what I have read, again, I am not Jewish, I am not Palestinian, I'm not Arab, I'm not black, I'm not this, I'm not that. So, you know, this is just a middle-aged white guy talking, and an atheist at that, has no validity whatsoever to speak for other people's thoughts or emotions. And I understand that. I'm only coming at this from the standpoint of someone who's tried to be educated about these issues. But the Jewish people have said, they've declared it to the entire world, never again. That's all. Never again. So when I talk about Israeli foreign policy, you know, I try to walk that thin line. It's Israeli foreign policy. It has nothing to do with Jews. And I know I'm just blowing smoke. And most of you who listen to this program know I'm blowing smoke. And again, the reason I do that, one of the reasons is because you don't have to scratch. How deep do you have to scratch? A millimeter before you hit the rich vein of anti-Semitism? Come on. But knowing all that, it is still possible. As a matter of fact, it's required, isn't it, to speak out for the Palestinian people, the plight of the Palestinian people, right? Isn't it? Isn't that what is going on? I read McGuire and Cynthia McKinney and 19 other people on this particular go-around. How many human rights organizations, in Israel run by Jews who struggle to assist the Palestinians to stop the oppression, to stop the horror being perpetrated by their own government against the Palestinians? How many organizations are there? 5, 10, 20? How many writers in Israel who have spoken out against this? It's to no avail, though. The world stood silent pretty much for an awful long time when Jews were burned alive. And not just in Treblinka and Auschwitz and Dachau and Bergen-Belsen and no. I'm talking about the villages that were burned to the ground when the Crusaders moved from Northern Europe to take back the Holy Land from the Muslims, and they would stop along the way and burn Jews for sport and witches, and if they found a few errant Muslims, they'd burn them too. So this is the hellish part. The world was silent for so long, and as the gay community made very clear in the 80s, silence equals death. Well, it equals death for the Jews for two millennia. It equals death for the Palestinians now. Silence always equals death. Always. It always, always, always equals death, doesn't it? So, you know, to the people who speak out about this issue, in speaking out about the plight of the Palestinian people, there, in my opinion, there is no condemnation It's not a zero-sum game. It's what I'm trying to get to here, and I'm not doing a very good job of it. You do not have to be absolutely anti-Jewish in order to be pro-Palestinian. Do you understand what I'm saying? Or vice versa, that's all. But nobody thinks that way anymore. I'm sorry, that's a gross overstatement. So many people do not feel that anymore. So many people do see it as a zero-sum game. If you are concerned about the Palestinians, you must hate the Jews. If you're concerned about the Jews, you must hate the Palestinians, that sort of thing, which obviously is nonsense. But in the madness of this world, it's not nonsense at all. It isn't. That's why so many, in my opinion, that's why so many so-called world leaders don't touch this issue. They don't touch it, especially in this country. That's why so many members of our Congress, why our administration, why our press, nobody touches this issue. Because it's seen as a zero-sum game. If Israel is democratized, Israel ceases to exist. Therefore, yada, 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 yada. But in the meantime, you say, in the meantime, the other sons of Abraham and daughters of Abraham are denied even basic human dignity by the oppressor. And whether you like this or not, the oppressor in this case are Jewish. The oppressors are Jewish. And, you know, they have felt the lash. They have listened to the Zyklon B dropping into the cans. They have heard the ovens being cranked up. So maybe there is a reason for never again. And that induces madness. How would you feel if you were 15 million strong and half of you were removed from the face of the earth? Would you be a little bit paranoid? Would you be? I'm not justifying it. I am not. I am saying the same thing Meir Kahane said about the Palestinian. Of course, the Palestinian sees the Jew as a mortal enemy because the Jew is coming from Kiev and Brooklyn and Buenos Aires and claiming the Palestinians' land. Of course, it's madness. It's all, every bit of it is madness.
Jesus, don't want me for something. Something's out of my head. Don't expect me to cry.
For the hour. All right. Back to your calls here. Joel is calling from Victoria, Minnesota, listening online. Hey, Joel.
Hi, Mike.
Thanks for your patience.
Thank you. My understanding insurance, I'm going to talk about insurance. This is just a hypothetical question. My understanding of insurance is you purchase a coverage, so-called insurance, for
right.
some kind of occasional events
right.
might or might not happen, right? The fire, accident, and so forth. You buy that, and you're outside of your control, and you just try to cover it yourself. Well, how that concept, I think that concept doesn't apply to the health health service. The concept of insurable, it's not insurable product because the frequency is changing as you age. You have to use doctor service and hospitals, dental, visual, and so on. So it's something you know. It's not insurable product. The concept doesn't apply here.
All right, so what are you saying? Nobody should have insurance?
Yeah, I mean, insurance doesn't apply because it's not event. It's healthcare. it's not event. It's something, you know, it's body maintenance.
No, I think you're looking at it in entirely bass backwards. In the first place, here it is for you. Everybody dies, and in the process of dying, unless it's an accident, we get sick. Sick in the sense that our systems start to break down, or we can't clean out the debris that starts to collect inside our bodies. And our livers or kidneys or hearts or lungs or whatever start to coagulate with crap that the system can no longer remove, and eventually we die. That's not what health insurance is about. What health insurance is about is when somebody gets pneumonia and can get well, because pneumonia is very treatable. Death is not. Some forms of cancer are treatable. At least the treatments, as horrifying as some of them are, the treatments do extend a person's lifetime, give them a little more time to say goodbye to the people that they love or the people that depend on them for emotional sustenance, et cetera, et cetera. When you talk about people and illness as systems, you must work in computers or something. Come on, give it a rest, okay? Nobody's talking about that. Look, when you take health insurance, here's the deal. You're betting that you're going to get sick, and you're betting that the cost of handling that sickness is going to be more than you can handle. The insurance company is betting that you're not going to get sick. But they hedge their bets two ways. First of all, they charge you all kinds of money just in case you do get sick. A, B, they try to figure out ways to not pay you when they lose the bet. Because in fact, you did get sick. And the insurance company was betting you wouldn't. They lost, but they don't pay. You know, in the old Wild West, I've seen movies, man, when somebody didn't pay, after the bet was declared, the winner of the bet was declared, the person who didn't pay was liable to wind up with a bullet in his forehead. You just don't play that way. If you're betting that I'm going to stay well and I get sick and I'm betting the other way and you don't pay, do I have a right to shoot you or something? Thanks for checking in, Joel. I appreciate it. One of the best books I ever read 3 or 4 years ago, it won the National Book Award some time ago. It's written by a physician. And I recommend this to everybody. If you have the courage, and I guess that, I don't know if it takes courage. If you have the clarity of mind, there you go. Somehow it's been slid into a question of courage. You know, most of our religions teach us, I say our religions, I'm talking about the human race, teach us to be horribly afraid of dying. The ego cannot contemplate its own non-existence, so we come up with religion! You'll live forever if you just do this! You'll be reincarnated! You'll this, you'll that. Okay, the best book I think I've ever read in terms of confronting everything head on is a book written by a physician entitled How We Die. How We Die, very simply. And what the physician talks about is four prominent ways of dying. Cancer, AIDS, heart disease, and what's the other one? There's a fourth one. It might be diabetes. But he takes you almost away. He takes you down to a cellular level so you can understand what death is all about, how we die. And, when I read this, did I sit there very ice cold and go, yes, okay, I get it? Hell no! It is weird to read this because when you apply it to yourself, all of a sudden, you've got a very deep internal look into your physical body. All the way down to the cellular level, and your organs. Oh, your organs are fun when they start to break down. Woo! But I recommend the book, really. How We Die. Interesting book. And I think that ties in with what the caller was talking about. You know, it is, when you talk about uninsurable, What can I say? People buy life insurance. There are companies that provide life and they sell life insurance. Why? Because using the systems of statistics and actuarial studies and so on and so forth, the insurance companies always win. They always win. They know, they're betting you're not going to die. You're betting you are, but they still win, even when you die. Isn't that funny? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. This is the Malloy program. Little business here. Don't forget, first of all, please become a podcast subscriber to this program. Go to MikeMalloy.com. The information is all there. There is no question that it's worth the 25 cents a show that it will cost you, but also there's no question that we need your support that way. It's not a contribution, it is buying. The program. Also, commercial-free version of the program. Also, you can go to the Malloy store now. There is stuff in there for sale. And we hope you'll do that. But becoming a podcast subscriber is very, very, very important. The other thing is AM 1090 in Seattle is presenting their fourth annual Town Hall Forum, where they round up as many liberal talk show hosts as there are left, and that number is getting smaller and smaller. And they present us to a screaming crowd of left-wing truth-seekers who are only there for these forums to hear the truth and to hear the discussion and participate in the discussion and hang out and maybe afterwards go drink or carry on or do whatever. But that's unofficial. Really, AM 1090 is not suggesting that. I am. But anyway, you can get tickets to this. You can go to tickets.showrcenter.com. I say it that way tonight. Show, the word show, S-H-O-W, the word R, A-R-E, the word center.com. Actually, it's the Show Where Center. That's where the gig's going to be held. But go to tickets.showrcenter.com. All the information is there. The doors open at 5 p.m. on Saturday, August 8th. The discussion runs from 6 to 9 p.m. After 9 p.m., you're on your own. Yeah. The people being there are going to be there are Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, Bill Press, moi, and Ron Reagan. We will strive to answer all sorts of questions posed by listeners via online submission and also a panel discussion moderated by David Postman, who's a former chief political reporter for the Seattle Times. So if you want to have a good time, Sailor, Saturday, August 8th, 6 to 9 p.m. at the Showare Center outside Seattle, go to the website and purchase tickets for you and your wife and your mama and them and your cousins. And get everybody there. Come on over. It's going to be these events are usually a lot of fun. So come on by, okay? We solve, in 3 hours, we, that's you and us on stage, we solve every single problem facing the American political system. We solve it all. It's all done. So that when we all walk out of this forum, everything's taken care of. We can go have a beer. Not. One more thing about the situation. One more thing tonight about the situation in Gaza. Got an email from Kurt who said the other night, he said, I just got home from a talk given by George Galloway, you know, the British MP, who is an anti-Zionist socialist, member of a parliament in the UK. Kurt writes, the short version is that he's been crisscrossing the United States the last several weeks, raising money for an organization. The website is vivapalestina-us.org. It says Palestina-us.org. That's the website. vivapalestina-us.org. If that's right. Is that right, Kurt? Okay. He's raising money to buy an ambulance medicine to take into Gaza next week. He and Ron Kovic, you know Ron Kovic. It was his story that became the book and the movie Born on the 4th of July. The double amputee, Ron Kovic, wasn't it? Or was that Coming Home? No, Born on the 4th of July. Ron Kovic, Vietnam veteran. Anyway, Ron Kovic and George Galloway are leading a convoy from JFK this July 4th. And they'll be buying the goods that they need in Cairo with the money raised. So, Mike, we can't do squat about the boat that was taken over by the Israeli Navy, but we can use our outrage to make the Galloway-Kovic mission as big a success as possible. Please consider mentioning this on the air and post a link to the site on your website. Those who donate can claim pride for their home state. New Jersey brought in something like $300,000 a few weeks ago and can even ask to have their name painted onto the ambulances, or they can do so anonymously. And for the rightly paranoid among us, the money is being handled by Pastors for Peace. So there's no need to donate to the Committee for the Destruction of the State of Israel, as the intelligence agencies view any Arab or Muslim charity these days. You can donate. The money's handled by Pastors for Peace. But go to this website if you are so inclined. Viva Palestina. I'll just pronounce it that way. VivaPalestina. VivaPalestina-us.org. VivaPalestina-us.org. Take a look around and do what you think is the morally acceptable thing to do. You may decide that doing nothing is morally acceptable. And if that's your decision, that's your decision. Right? Now, wait a second. I don't want to put this in the Oval file because Kurt has asked me to mention this again, so I'll mention it again tomorrow. All right, where are we? Let's see, we're right here. David is in Rock Island, Illinois. Hey, David.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hi.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome aboard.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting. I got a kick out of talking to Kathy, too. But I started back in the WSB days.
Oh, my God!
Oh, yeah. And I just have one question. Is it true what I heard about the charity bowling tournament at Deal Board?
What did you hear? I haven't heard this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I heard that you had some sort of a altercation with Neil Bort for the bowling tournament.
No, I've had a couple of altercations with him. Because,
oh, well, good.
Yeah,
I hope they were successful.
Well, I think they were. When we both worked at WSB, they used to make us do a thing called buttheads. That can be interpreted two ways. Two people butting heads or two buttheads. He would take a neo-Nazi position, and I would take a normal human being position.
Yeah, well, he is a neo-Nazi.
Well, he is. Yeah, there's no question. Bortz is, there's no question. If not neo-Nazi, certainly neo-fascist. I would.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's you're right.
Yeah, he's a neo-fascist, and he's very proud of it.
Anyway, the reason why I called,
yeah.
It makes him a lot of money.
Okay.
The reason why I called was the Carlin piece, and then you're mentioning about no place to hide.
Right.
It just kind of came together to me, and reminded me of something that happened to me in 1969.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
That's before long before I was born, but go ahead.
Yeah, right. Me too. Anyway, in 1969, I was insinuated into a extremely wealthy family via a girlfriend.
Yeah.
We're talking 0.1% upper, I mean, seriously wealthy, old money.
I got you.
Anyway, I was talking to my girlfriend's younger brother, and he'd just gotten back from Stevenson's, the prep school in Carmel.
Right.
And he'd gotten back from a 6-month-long tour of America in a private rail car for a graduation present. All right. I mean, seriously, his best friend's father owned the railroad.
Today. Yeah, that's seriously rich. Yeah. All right. Listen, wait, David, stop, because I got to do a break. Stop right there. The kid brother comes back from a long tour via private rail car to the United States. Let me put you on hold. When we come back, I want you to finish the story. Oh my God, I got to hear the end of this. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy. Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox with an EPA estimated 32 miles per gallon highway and up to 600 highway miles on the tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox. Based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles. The hour, we were talking with David, right?
Yeah.
All right.
To cut right to the chase, he's just gotten back from this long trip.
Right. And now, wait. Let's recap. This is the rich kid brother of your rich girlfriend, top 0.1% went on a extended a tour of the United States by a private rail car.
Right.
Okay.
Which is incidental to the story, really, but he asked me if I had a passport. Not really thinking that I wasn't rich like everybody else he knew. And I said, no, I didn't have one. And he kind of looked at me strangely, and he said, well, then how do you expect to get out of the country when the riots start? I'm serious.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, he said that. And I said, well, I don't know.
Right.
These people have been planning for the destruction of this country for a very long time.
They have indeed, yeah.
And they've taken Curry Two's advice to heart, except they're stocking more than canned goods.
Right.
So I just thought, yeah, and then what with George Carlin, what he said, I mean, we're toast. They've got the bases covered, unfortunately.
Well,
maybe there's a way out. I'm hoping.
Well, the only way out is for everyone at the same time to find the exit doors and throw them wide open and just stand there and dare somebody to push them shut on us again.
Yeah, but that's what they use, this race thing to keep us from doing that.
Sure.
And that's what irritates me about racism, is what it does. Both whites, blacks, and anybody else. It's what the rich use to rule it. It's horrible.
Yeah.
It's horrifying. But anyway, that just brought my mind to that particular, and that's been in my mind ever since that happened, the look he gave me when I said I didn't have a passport, and he just looked at me like, well, how do you expect to leave when the riots start?
One of life's little moments. I hear you. Hey, David, thanks. I got to move on. Appreciate it very much. Call in again. Don't be a stranger. Thanks, David. I got time. Yeah, I got time to do this. Jan in Mill Valley writes in, Mike, this is an update on the kidnapped prisoners. Mike, this morning I spoke with the husband of one of the kidnapped Americans from the Spirit of Humanity. He, the husband, had spoken with his wife earlier and said that Israel is insisting that everyone sign a deportation order. The group is refusing to sign, part of the reason being that they had no intention of going to Israel and were brought in against their will. Israel wants to deport each person back to their country of origin, but the group wants to return to Cyprus, the departure point for the boat. As of now, the Israeli thugs are still in possession of the personal goods of everyone on the boat, including camera equipment. The men and the women have been separated. They are confined to their jail cells for 22 hours a day and have been visited by U.S. consulate workers. Many of us find it appalling that so little attention has been paid to this act of piracy in international waters and the kidnapping of everyone on board. It would be nice to think that the Michael Jackson hullabaloo was the reason, but I think we know the real reason. News of Israeli crimes don't often make headlines. I just tried to phone in since you're live now in the Bay Area, but just got a busy signal. Right. No, thanks, Jan. I don't know who he's talking about. He spoke with the husband of one of the kidnapped Americans on that boat, but three or four of the people there were Americans who are part of a documentary film crew. And a couple of whom are Jewish. And they went along because, first of all, they believe in the mission. This is a humanitarian mission, and went along to document it. And apparently that film now, or the cameras, have been taken. And again, I think the statement by Myreed McGuire is extremely important. While we should be concerned about 21 people hijacked on the open seas, or 22 people hijacked on the open seas by a state, not by a stateless group of pirates, not by people coming from a failed state like Somalia, but a recognized a member of the United Nations, a state. Good God, a country would either term you want to use, taking people off their ship and taking them to a port. I mean, if we did this, oh, I'm not going to go through it again, but just think if this were a Taliban or Al-Qaeda, so-called, who had kidnapped these 21 people. What do you think would be happening in this country? What do you think? How much screaming would there be about, even though so many people in this country do not like Cynthia McKinney because A, she's female, B, she's black, C, she's outspoken, D, she stands up for the rights of the Palestinians, E, she's got a lunatic for a father, but we're not talking about her father, we're talking about her. It's madness.
At the state of the world that we live in, where no one gives a damn about the future of children, just building a cash flow, making a bank account. Let us expose the truth. Is that what the war's about? Cause I don't understand. But what kind of a man should have to sacrifice his life for an area of sin? All the turmoil's making my blood boil, cause I don't wanna see our people dying for oil. See this so-called media sway, don't believe in ya. The way I'm receiving ya, it seems you're deceiving the mass majority.
Make way for P Dog, the Bush killer, cop killer, black urban girl. Gorilla, because without justice, I'll bust and kill us.
Introducing the all-new Chevy Equinox, with an EPA-estimated 32-mile-per-gallon highway and up to 600 miles on a tank. It's the most fuel-efficient crossover on the highway. Go to Chevy.com/Equinox based on GM compact crossover segment, excludes other GM vehicles.
Making my blood boil, cause I don't wanna see our people dying for oil. See the so-called media, Sway don't believe in ya, the way I'm receiving ya, the siege of deceiving the mass majority.
25 before the hour, flip the scenario, Bob writes, an Israeli boat is seized by us in the Gulf of Mexico, delivering humanitarian supplies to Katrina victims. On the boat is a former member of the Knesset who, with the rest of the crew, is taken to an American prison. What would happen at the United Nations the next day? Ooh! There would probably be some yelling and screaming, I guess. Regarding the health insurance thing, Michael writes, well, until we die, there's one simple truth. Health insurers make their money by denying health care whenever possible and by overcharging for health care by any means possible through copays, out-of-network charges, by sloughing off direct costs onto the insured in every way imaginable. Anyone who doesn't understand that and tries to defend the status quo is effectively saying that the rich have a God-given right to rob the poor. The 25% of the public hasn't figured out... the 25% of the public that hasn't figured that out shouldn't be a problem for the 75% who have, presuming we're still a democracy. That 25% are likely the ones who will think Obama was born in Kenya and think all the Iraqi weapons of mass destruction were spirited away to Syria and think that Sarah Palin is a voice of reason and perspicacity. Perspicacity. Why did you throw that word in? Michael, there's too many diphthongs in there. Perspicacity. Kay is calling from Ocean Park, Washington, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Kay.
Yeah.
Thanks, thanks for holding on. Sorry it took so long.
Oh, well.
Well, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
you're on.
I just wanted to say that when you were talking at the beginning of the program about Obama's, shall we say, failings?
Yes.
That you might want to consider the Green Party. I suppose if you were a true conservative, you'd go with the Libertarian Party. And if you're a true progressive or liberal, then you would go with Green. And I think that, you know, just segue into Cynthia McKinney right there.
Right.
Putting her money where her mouth is, which is more than you can say for Obama.
Well, that's true in so many ways. Kay, there's all kinds of horrific static on your phone, and I know you've been holding on for an hour, but I have to leave it there because it's. But I get your point. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. As far as considering the Green Party, yeah, I have many times. In the last two presidential election cycles, as a matter of fact, which covers about 8 years, well, I guess it would be three. You know, I've gotten into almost blood feuds with people, liberals, progressives, who were incensed that, you know, I continue to go with Democrats rather than switch to the Green Party. I don't mean switch like, you know, some great big declaration. Nobody gives a damn what I do anyway. But you know what I'm saying. On the program, instead of coming out and completely and totally endorsing the Green Party, and I have completely and totally endorsed the Green Party, I really have. As the caller pointed out, if you are a true progressive, where else are you going to go? But the hideous fact is, the system is so skewed as to deny third party or fourth or fifth party participation in damn near anything in this country. It does not fit with the corporate model of two parties, both of which, to greater or lesser degrees, are owned outright by corporate America, so that the rest of us can sit around and say, hey, I'm going to vote Republican. Hey, I'm going to vote Democrat. There are some differences, but they are not essential differences between these two political parties. The differences are out around the borders, the edges, the perimeter. Sure, let's all go green. Let's vote for some good green candidates. Let's stop the nonsense. Let's take our country back. Okay, now what? Well, whatever you decide to do. right? Chris is calling from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Chris.
Hello. How are you?
Is this... I'm fine, Chris. Which Chris is this? Is this Chris from...
From Albuquerque.
Oh, Chris from Albuquerque. Okay, hi, Chris.
Hi, Mike. a thing just occurred to me. It's not why I called, on the health care.
Yeah?
We can be assured that the people who really run the country will allow enough people to keep making a semi-decent living just so they can assure they can afford the premiums. But you know, that's my comment on health care.
Well, that's yeah, sure, that's a good comment.
And my family lost 26 people in the camps, and I have no hatred for the Palestinians, nor do I have a hatred for my own people, but they do mystify me. The difference in how they behave and what they're taught is so vast that just I can't understand how they make these decisions, this business of excuse me, of snatching this boat. You're right, you know, it's piracy. There's no other word to describe it. If I were Cynthia McKinney and that group, I wouldn't sign the paper either. That kind of validates what they've done.
That's like the old Soviet Union where they'd make you sign a confession.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's kind of like, you know, signing the ticket, a speeding ticket. You know, you're not admitting you're guilty, but at least. You know, you've entered the system. I find this frightening. My brother had a patch made up when he was in Vietnam, and it was a peace symbol, and it said, "Participant, Far East Asia War Games, to be continued, Middle East, 1986. Well, obviously, he was, he missed the date, but the concept was right.
Sure. And you know what, Chris? The thing that constantly, unendingly assaults whatever sense of justice or hope or whatever I have left is the fact that the only and I'm going to go out on a limb here, the only difference between the Arab and the Jew in the Middle East, the essential difference that is causing the murder and the mayhem, is religion. Isn't it? I mean, that's it. These are Semitic people, all of them. And even though they share the same prophet, Abraham, as do the Christians, they still want to cut each other's throats, apparently, one way or another. I don't mean to suggest that throat cutting is occurring even as we speak, although I'm sure it is. But it's the religion thing. Can you imagine, just for the sheer hell of it, if religion was not a part of this, not Islam, not Judaism, not Christianity, that it was just, you know, people wanting to live in peace in the Middle East. This is one of the reasons, as far as I'm concerned, there will never, ever, 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 ever be a solution. There will not be. You know, the Christians can wait until their hell freezes over for the return of their Messiah. The Jews can wait until their hell freezes over for the appearance of their Messiah. The Muslims can wait until their hell freezes over for the reappearance of Muhammad. And you know what? I'll go out further on the limb. It's not going to happen. This is crazy. This is crazy. Wait a minute. You called me. I didn't call you. I'm sorry.
Well, I listen to you on the radio and perfectly willing to listen to you on the phone.
Well, I'm sorry.
I find you enormously enlightening. I kind of had to be dragged out with the jaws of life more conservative viewpoint, although never Republican or anything like that.
Right.
My horizons are broadened on a daily basis. I am, in fact, a member and I joined just to make sure that that you stay on the air.
Well, thank you.
Do my little part.
That's well, it's not little. That's a very big part, and I do appreciate it.
You're more than welcome. But you're absolutely, it's religion. I mean, you can go back, you know, as far as you want, and, you know, there it is raising its ugly head, and you never get this business of it always being based on faith. Well, I have faith in several things, none of them religion, but I'm not willing to kill anybody over any of them.
Well, I hear that, Chris. Hey, listen, pal, I got a break here. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in. And I hope you call again, okay? Thanks, Chris. We'll be right back. About 10 before the hour. Thanks to our crew, Ben Burch, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Rosenberg, Kathy Bay, who engineers and produces the program. So did you have fun tonight? Did you have fun, Ray? Ray's calling from Davenport, Iowa. Did you have fun tonight?
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Well, thank you.
I'm calling because Iowa and Illinois have reciprocal agreements, and since Dave called, I thought I should call.
Okay.
as far as Dave's call, I have a comment on Dave. Remember the no-fly list? All the Democrats in the United States are on it, aren't they, I guess?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. Oh, sure.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I think our problems all started about the time Reagan got into office, or at least really got rolling in with his con game of the tax switch. And when I heard that we were going to celebrate his 100th birthday, I couldn't believe it because I was sitting here saying, why?
Well, that's true. He did. He took the country into more debt than the previous entirety of administrations had taken the country from the founding of the republic all the way up to 1980 when Reagan left. He had accumulated more, and this is a Republican. You know, they don't believe in accumulating debt. And the sole purpose was to do what, frankly, is happening in California right now, and that was to break this country into a million pieces, bankrupt it. And
that's right.
Yeah, Reagan started it. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, he legally did it. He passed laws and he put 60% tax cuts to the rich, and he made the largest tax increase. And since the rich got a decrease, I guess we all got the increase.
Yeah, there you go. However it was worked out, or however it was planned, guess who lost?
Yeah,
the entire country, 99.9% of the country, the 0.1% who make out at least financially, no matter what happens, they're just happy as pigs in their own droppings. No, wait. Hold on just a second, Ray, because now I'm going to get people calling me and saying, but pigs don't hang out in their own droppings. The pigs are clean animals. Okay, just an expression. All right, go ahead, Ray.
They weren't dirty anyway. They were out buying yachts. Why?
There you go. That's true. That's true.
I remember Patco voted for him, and he fired 11,000 of them.
Yeah, wasn't that a nice day in America?
Yeah, the Teamsters voted for him, and he more than doubled their gas tax.
Wasn't that a nice day for the union movement in this country?
Yeah, and then the people voted for him, and he doubled their tax was funny. They just don't know it yet.
I know. It's remarkable stuff. I don't know why it keeps happening. Hey, Jerry, I got to leave it there. Ray, I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot, man. Okay?
All right.
All right. Thanks. Take care. Appreciate you checking in. Jerry's calling from Mankato, Minnesota. Is that right?
Mankato.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. I actually have a pretty interesting background. I listen to you every night, and I truly learn a lot just by listening to you. And I actually watched The Guys, the movie that you mentioned.
Uh-huh.
Basically confirmed what I've been thinking for a long time.
You're talking about the movie Zeitgeist.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's quite interesting. But my call is really about what's going on in Palestine today. And I am originally from Ethiopia, and a lot of people in my country really believe, you know, it's a pretty religious country, so. And what's going on, the plight of the Palestinians is really, you know, okay with a lot of people from my country. Actually, still today, people volunteer to go and defend the Zion. You know, it's a common practice today. And coming to this country really opened up my eyes, and listening to you even makes it better to know that people think that way. But it's a crime of a century, if you ask me. It's disgusting, and the mainstream media doesn't say anything about it. And when I talk to my friends about it, I work with a lot of Caucasian. I do have a 4-year degree, and I do work in a kind of blue collar industry area.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in IT,
mm-hmm.
and talking to them about the plight of these people is just talking to a wall.
Well, one thing I'm sure you've come to understand in this country, Jerry, people are incredibly ignorant of basic. Just basic facts of international relations, basic facts of U.S. involvement in other countries' internal affairs for the past century and a half since we became an imperial power or decided to try to become one. And now it's, of course, just we've crapped out, so to speak. We have rolled snake eyes, and now it's just a matter of time before this insanity comes to an end one way or another. But one of the reasons for this thudding sound that if you listen closely, you'll hear, and that's chunks of America falling to the ground now, is because of our collective ignorance here. We are a very, very unsophisticated and incredibly stupid collection of people because so many of us believe in all kinds of sky spooks and spirits and haints and ghosts and this and that. And, you know, if you talk to a sky being in your head, then all kinds of wonderful things will happen. And if you don't talk to that sky being, he will cast you into hell. I don't know. It's madness. It's just madness. That's all. I've said that several times tonight. It's madness. It's like being in a funhouse, a house of mirrors. But remember the first word in funhouse. Jerry, thanks, man. I appreciate it. I hope you call in again. That's it tonight, folks. Did you have a good time? I hope so. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Can you hear that?